My name is Chris Raymer. I'm a recovered alcoholic. It's good to see you guys. So many of you I know. That's one of the cool things about coming back to the same place and talking over and over. You wear them down. Sooner or later, they all come back and get a chance to meet some new friends. And gee whiz, some of you guys I've known since I first got sober up in Louisville. And I'm honored to be here. I see my first sponsor strutting through the audience. My current sponsor sitting over here next to Meyer. So I'm as screwed as you get in here. You know, I had a bunch of great stories made up. I can't tell any of them now. I've had a great weekend. It was a wonderful drive up, and got a chance to spend some time with family this weekend, and it's good to be here. I was out with Myers this afternoon, and Myers is a beekeeper. He's got some beehives out there, right? And so, you know, the city boy, you know, I'm out there pretending I'm Ewell freaking Gibbons, you know, out there checking it out, you know, oh, bees, how fun, nature, how wonderful, you know, and he did something, I don't know if he did it on purpose or not, but that hive, and I had four bee stings in my head this afternoon. I mean, they obviously didn't know who they were stinging, but I'm feeling a little funky, so I got to tell you, if I start buzzing through this thing, you know, halfway through, you'll understand I'm turning, you know, it's just like, can you die from a bee sting? I don't know, it's just, I don't know. I'm honored to be here. I real quick, as always, when I get a chance to visit with some of you guys, I need to tell you what Cliff said. I mean, we laugh about me being shy. You know, I mean, when I start speaking and I get pretty wrapped up, I spit and foam at the mouth, and I mean, and I seem like I'm pretty out there. And then I get finished or before. You know, people that know me in this room know that I'm as shy as they come. I mean, I'm pretty quiet old boy, and it's the truth. I mean, the people that are laughing at that don't know me. Because I'm until I start talking about this, and I don't know. It's like people are always saying, Chris, why don't you sell something? You could get rich. And I said, you know, if I could work this much passion into something I'd be rich as I could be. There's no question about it. God seems to bless me with this one little thing here, and I'm grateful for that. I would have rather been rich and good looking, but what the heck, you know? What the heck? I was in Denton this afternoon. Last night we went over to dinner and got a chance to see some friends of mine, and got to visit with a young man who was considering getting sober, and it was a cool thing. I got a chance to drive by the old homestead where I lived up in Denton. I was there for about four years or so, and very drunk. I couldn't remember the name of the street I lived on for 4 years. You know, they finally told me last night at dinner, well, you know where that street is. It's, you know, so and so. And I drove down this little raggedy street where I used to live and sat out in front of the little house where I used to just drink myself blind every night, and so much unhappiness on that street. And there's nothing wrong with the street, but just I was there, you know, and it was just I was unhappy wherever I went. And I got to tell you, folks, I'm sitting in this room watching you guys and hugging on some necks, and I'm awful grateful tonight to be a part of this. Alcoholism and drug addiction is a fatal chronic illness, and it kills us when we're drinking, and what so many people don't understand is it kills us when we're not drinking. And unless alcoholism is arrested, unless we recover, then this internal condition is going to continue to get worse, and we're going to come out sideways and do really stupid things. And one of those things is just to be miserable. And what Cliff said is so true. You know, if you can't be happy and sober, then something's wrong. And I used to sit, you know, this idea that if we sit around AA for a long period of time, we're going to understand what this is about, that we know everything there is to know about Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's like, that is just absolute crap. You know, it's not true. And until you stick your beak into this literature and start seeing what this is really about, you're not going to experience the miracle of what recovery is. I mean, I work at a treatment center, and I do clerical work for this hospital, and they let us do a big book thing in the morning where we get to talk to the cats about God and the steps, and hopefully try to excite some of them enough to get connected when they leave treatment. Because it's been our observation that the people that leave that hospital and get connected out here with great, strong groups, doesn't have to be primary purpose, other groups. As long as they get involved in a strong group where they're talking about God and the steps, they're kicking butt, staying sober. The cats that don't seem to be able to do that, you know, the ones that are relapsing. And that's some of the stuff that I want to kind of talk about tonight. Y'all don't mind if I take this off, do you? Good. I don't see how anybody can talk. You don't mind if I take this off, do you? No. On page 155, I've talked about this up here before when I've had the chance to do this. I'm watching the clock because it's going to get hot in here, and I know you guys, I'm not going to keep you very long, but I would just like to share a few things and try real hard to get through this without cussing too much. Screw you. Hi, Marco. On page 155, Bill Wilson's talking about Dr. Bob, and in this first meeting, it said he had a desperate, talking about Dr. Bob, he said he had a desperate desire to stop but saw no way out, for he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape. Painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, the man did not fully realize what it meant to be alcoholic. And that's my experience. You know, I was around AA for 7 years. And some of y'all have heard my story, and I know I irritate some of you. It's funny how you guys can be. You know, it's like, as long as I'm saying everything you believe, that Chris Raymer, he's the best speaker. He's the nicest guy. We're going to name our kid after him. You know, he's just touched by God. The minute I stand up from the podium and say something that you don't agree with, you know, I'm Satan's son. You know, I mean, we get real sensitive in these rooms. And I got to tell you, we got other people from other walks in here that may do different, their own program that's a little different, you know. And if that's the way you're working it, that's great, but you're just not going to appreciate where I'm coming from, perhaps. And then this is my story, my nickel, it's my experience. It may be different than your experience, so please, if I step on somebody tonight, I mean, I trust me, I don't intend to. I honestly don't. No, I don't. I don't. Y'all think I enjoy it. I don't. But I mean, where my passion comes from, y'all have heard me 1,000 times, is that I sat in AA for 7 years in and out of the fellowship, and I think I'm going crazy because I'm sitting here watching you guys laugh and joke and walk in with a good-looking woman on your arm and driving a nice new car and everything's just great, and then I'm driving some beat-up old rent-a-heap and I'm dying. I mean, the depression won't leave, the boredom won't go away, and the anxiety, and I'm coming apart at the seams. I'm taking handfuls of pills a day just to kind of get me moving through the day, but I'm one day at a time, I'm keep coming back, you know, because it's bound to work. I'm bound to catch it, you know, and I just want to puke. And I sit in these meetings and I listen to you guys talk your absolute crap, you know, just, well, I'm having a bad day. I just need a place to share, and everybody will say, oh, that's good, you know, and it's like, And I said, oh, great, here we go, you know. You know what it is when we laugh about it. I mean, what's a bad day? I mean, when you come into a meeting, I'm having a bad day. That's just another way of saying it ain't going the way I want it to go. Isn't that the truth? And so now we're going to have to listen to why you think you're being screwed over and life is so tough and, you know, and it's a bit. And I'm sitting there, yeah, it is. And we're all sitting in there. We've all got problems. We've all got hassles, you know. But, guys, somewhere along the line, you know, we've gotten off the page. And I say it from any podium I'm at. I'll be in England in a couple of weeks, and we're giving the same stupid message, you know. And I've never been threatened or lynched by a bunch of English people before, but I'm sure it'll happen, you know. Because I stand up from the podium and I want to talk to you about this because somewhere along the line, see, the book says we got a primary purpose. Our fifth tradition says, if you read the long form, it says we're a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose. What's that primary purpose? Trying to help somebody stay sober. And somewhere along the line, thanks to treatment centers, we got taken to a place where we believe that if we could just solve all of your little chicken shit problems, then you could stay sober. And see, what we need to understand is I'm 16 years sober now, and I still have some chicken shit little problems. You know, I mean, it's like life is not going to stop just because I got sober. I've still got some problems, but I'm not going to come into a meeting full of a bunch of nutcases and try to play junior therapy back and forth so we can figure out what to do with our problems. And I got to tell you, that's probably the most controversial thing I say from the podium, because so many of us in this room believe it's our God-given right to sit in a meeting and talk about anything we want. And it's not. The book is crystal clear. We're supposed to be sharing our experience, strength, and hope about getting sober. We're never going to get around talking about the steps or how to make amends or how to do that stupid fourth step or how to have that spiritual experience. We're never going to get a chance to talk to the cats about that because we're too busy trying to fix your little life. The book says, guys, Bill Wilson wrote extensively about it. If you'll read the archives, if you'll talk, I mean, he wrote extensively about this. We cannot take on the problems of every AA member. We are not here as a dumping ground for problems. And yet, we've got open discussion meetings absolutely rampant everywhere with no topic, not a big book in sight, and that's all they want to do is sit around and talk about the problem. And then they come to my treatment center and sit down and say, "Whoa, I'm so disappointed y'all are doing the 12 steps. I've tried AA. It doesn't work." I said, "No kidding. It worked for me. It worked for me. 1987, boom. Walked in the back door of an AA meeting. I mean, guys, I was sitting there this afternoon in front of that house, and I was just remembering the absolute despair. You know, I was one of those drunks that had periods of time where things were going great. You know, I mean, I was making some money, and I was succeeding in my career, and everything was going great. And then I'd have these times where I'd hit these little low spots, you know, like eating out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas, you know, and it's just a little... You know, but then I'd bounce right back and I'd right back up the ladder, and it's like, and I'm looking around and everybody I'm drinking with is drinking just like me, so obviously that's not the problem. And I'm sitting around trying to figure out if I can just get my life organized. You with me? I don't know about some of you guys, but I'm a thinker. I mean, I didn't say particularly bright, folks. I mean, I got no degree in my name, but I mean, I was always a thinker. I always get quiet, you know, turn the stereo on, put some great Poco on or something, you know, some nice sounds, you know, and kick back with a legal tablet and try to figure out why my life is so unfulfilling. You know what? What's not right? Sharpens a bunch of pencils, you know, and gotta get ready, you know, and turn the TV on, you know, and turn all the lights on. Make sure I got plenty of distraction, you know, because the voices in my head are screaming, you know. And they all sound like this: "Chris, you're a worthless piece of shit." And it's like, well, I can see this is not going well. And, you know, and by the end of the little exercise, of course, I've got a dead 12-pack laying next to me, you know, a box of Kentucky Fried Chicken, bones on the floor, you know, and I'm in a half-illegible sheet of paper written out, you know, and I've got it figured out. It's an epiphany. I need a new job and a new woman. Sex and checks. I mean, guys, that's what it's about. Sex or checks. Down in Mississippi, I talked down there one time, and they said, "Yep, that's right. It's either green or pink." I said, "What?" But I understood, because that's the way it always was. And when I started going to therapy, that's what I wanted to talk about. I used to sit with Myers. We used to have little boaters out there. We'd go out in the car, you know, because he wasn't supposed to be drinking. I was such a bad influence on him. I was dragging him down the road. And we'd sit out he had a Land Cruiser, and we'd sit out there and drink beer and talk. And I'd try to explain this to him. "Chris, you don't understand. You know, if I could just get out of this stupid food business, you know, I'm in the restaurant business and the pressure and that, all that, get out of that, get me a good woman, somebody that would consider having sex more than once every 6 months. I mean, just, is that too much to ask? You know, is that," and Myers said, "Yeah, you're right. You know, but you might want to look at your drinking too. You know," I says, "Buddy, you know, you don't understand. This is why I drink. If I could get all these things worked out, everything would be okay." And I got to tell you guys, I got a hospital down in the hill country full of patients right now that believe that same crap. They've been around AA, and nobody told them any different. And I think it's an absolute tragedy that we allow newcomers to sit in meetings believing that their outside issues are what's causing us to drink. I'm going to tell you what the book says. The book says I've got a physical allergy, which means that I can't control how much I put in my body at certain times. Not every time. I functioned for 20 years, folks. I wasn't going to jail and blacking out and doing crazy things. I had a job. I never got fired from a single job in my life. I was doing good out there. You with me? But I was dying inside. But the phenomenon of craving would kick in, and I'd go off the races and accidentally drink more than I intended. You with us? At certain times, you know? I hear these guys, these kids come to the hospital. "Every time I drank to get squashed." Not my experience. You know what happens when I get squashed? I throw up, the stuff gets caught in my beer, and my patch is perpetually crooked. Buddy, I want to tell you something. It's tough to get laid when you got it looks like a half of an earmuff on, you know. You wouldn't go out with me, would you? Not in this lifetime, no. Y'all with me? All right. So here's where the deal. You couple that with a mental obsession that tells you that you're going to keep doing it. You see, and this is the problem. The book says if you can stop on a non-spiritual basis, then you're not one of us. It's just that simple. But we don't qualify the drunks when they come to our fellowships. You go into most groups, they say, "Hey, you having a trouble with alcohol? Uh-huh. Welcome." So you just sit there like deer in a headlight and then listen to everybody talk about their stupid war stories. And the first person that says something that you can't relate to, like getting arrested or getting a DWI or blacking out, you check. Oh, I'm not one of them. See, that's not what the book says. The book doesn't say anything about blacking out or passing out or doing any of this weird stuff. I don't have to go to prison to qualify to be an alcoholic. I have to have had the phenomenon of craving and the obsession of the mind. And if you've got that, guys, who in this room has been given sufficient reason to quit? Who's had one of their kids look at them in the face and say, "You're drinking, scaring me"? A mom and dad saying, "You're freaking us out. Your grade's in jeopardy. Your health in jeopardy." Who's been given a reason to stop and then continue to do it? Welcome. But you see, nobody in 7 years told me that. It's an absolute travesty. In 1975, we had about a million big books in 1975 printed out there in circulation. Right now, we've got over 19 million. But our membership is stalled 10 years ago and has grown very little. We got a lot of this literature out, but nobody's studying it. Nobody's reading it. Nobody's staying. Absolute tragic. Why? Who wants to work the steps when it's easier to go to an open discussion meeting and just talk about your crappy day, get a little temporary relief, and then go on about your business? And then you wonder why this internal condition, what the book calls the spiritual malady, is never treated. Because your spiritual malady is not going to be treated by organizing your external world. That's why some of us are so crazy, because, gosh, I'm trying to think. I drank and drug when things were going great. I drank and drug when things were going absolute crappy. You with us? I drank and drug on Christmas. I drank and drug on Tuesday morning. Can y'all understand that? I drank when I had a great woman in my life. I drank when I had no woman in my life. What the heck? So why are we spending all of our time in these meetings talking about stuff that we don't really need to be talking about anyway? There's a path to God, folks. It's called the 12 steps. See, the steps get us connected to God, and God removes the obsession for me to drink. I mean, it's the coolest. But I'm in AA, I'm going to say it again, up here in North Texas for 7 years, listening to people not ever talk about that. Well, one day at a time, easy does it. Don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. In 1987, I'd left that house in Denton, and I was living with my brother. One more time, I know we got a bunch of Al-Anons in here. We got family members in here. I want to thank you for being here. I want to thank you for staying close to us. I need to be the first to tell you, if it hadn't have been for family, I would have not survived this. It's just that simple. And in 1987, I was working for my brother, and I drove home one night. He didn't know anything about it. There was no weird stuff going on that day. It's just that I was just in another one of those funks. I was drinking steady. I was not drinking at work, of course, but I mean, I stopped, got a 12-pack of beer, went home, picked up a stack of return checks, went into my little apartment, opened them all up, said, "This is stupid. You know, I'm 35 years old, and I've bankrupted my account one more time." Poor Londa, you know, she spent half the time I worked for him for 8 years. She spent half her time trying to figure out my checking accounts. Chris, you need to understand, buddy. You put so much money in, that's how much money you got to spend. You can't spend... Bless her heart. But I was just so done. You know, some of y'all in here know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, you get to a certain spot and you're just done. You know, I've tried AA, I've tried therapy, I've been to the church, I've been dipped, dunked, Marcia, sprayed and neutered, you know, I've had the crystals, I've been rothed, you know, I had all the stuff done, I mean, and nothing's ever changing inside, and I'm done. I'm looking at this little filthy apartment. Me and a ferret share this apartment. Buddy, you should have smelled that cage. He's back there. Gus, you should smell his room, you know, and it's like, it was, but I'm just, you know, you know, I've talked about this from the podium, guys, and I don't do it for shock. I mean, a lot of people have tried to commit suicide. A lot of people have been successful at committing suicide. I believe half those people that have committed suicide, none of them really wanted to die. There wasn't a thing in me that wanted to die. I just wanted to stop feeling the way I was feeling. You know, people that are not alcoholics don't understand that we are not walking around in a blackout, you know. There are times when we start to sober up and we remember all the crazy shit we did. We remember the people we let down and the lies we told we remember the fact that we didn't exactly meet up to the expectations that we started out as kids. It's not a good place to be. And after a while, you just run out of steam and you just say, what the heck? I took a bottle of pills and some Black Label that night and tried to commit suicide. And I aborted the attempt through the middle of it. Y'all have heard me talk about it. I heard this voice that said, go back to AA. And I did. The next day, I made a commitment that I was going to go do this again. And I walked back in the rooms, and I landed in a room where Don was at, and over in Louisville, Texas. And they were all carrying big books, and they were laughing. It wasn't a big book meeting. They just were carrying big books, and they were all studying them. And we talked about a step every night. That's what they were doing there at the time, and it was a pretty cool thing. And I got to tell you, guys, they gathered around me, and those cats, they loved me. But they weren't going to put up with any of my stuff. I mean, they weren't there to pinch my little cheek like people have been doing for 7 years. You just keep coming back. And it's like, buddy, I've been coming back for 7 years, and this pain has never gone away. The fellowship is not going to keep me sober. The work keeps me sober. Doing our primary purpose, helping other people, keeps us sober. But, you know, we're trying to get sober up in North Texas, where they tell you you can't even get a job in service work until you've been sober a year. You can't chair meetings. You can't work with newcomers. They got people everywhere killing people, telling people that. I'm going to tell you something. I've said it from a million podiums. Thank God nobody told Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob that. We'd all be dead. You got to wait a year before you can go to the treatment center and carry a message back into them. You got to wait a year before you can get involved with intergroup. This is ludicrous. This is stupid. If you don't get involved quick, you're not going to stay here, folks. You're going to get so bored, you'll come out of your mind. I mean, let me run something by you. You know, here's the truth. We spend a lot of time in our meetings talking about the crazy stuff that we do after we drink. You with us? Non-stop, stupid war stories. Well, I did this, I drove all night, went to Vegas. No. We do all these stupid war stories. And we talk about all the people we impacted. You sit in an 8-9-step meeting and you listen to all the people that we owe amends to. And we're just talking about all the cats that we harmed out there. Let me run something by you. You know what we don't talk about enough in these rooms is how many people we impact once we get sober. And look how delicate this whole thing is. Look how delicate this whole thing was balanced. Look at the meeting that Cliff was talking about with Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. Look how intricate that thing happened with Myers and Pam and trying to get this group and getting connected with these people. What would have happened if Don hadn't been in that meeting that night? Because I was done. I was ready to walk. There was way too much laughter in that room, and I didn't want nothing to do with it. What would have happened if he hadn't have been there? Well, you'd have gotten sober some other. Yeah, you can blow it off if you want to. You can shuffle it off. I'm going to tell you this. I believe every single one of us were divinely put here. And I believe there's a reason that every single one of us are supposed to be here. And there's a reason that every single one of us in this room are supposed to stay sober. Preamble says our primary purpose is to stay sober so that we can go help somebody else. Some of you guys, you know, I talk to and I visit with, you know, you're what we call chronic relapsers. You just keep doing this over and over and over again. Let me tell you something right now from the podium. Bless you. You're welcome. It's not okay. It's not okay that you keep doing that. We don't need more members to work with. We've got an endless supply out here in the DFW area to take care of. Thank you very much. People that have never heard the message. Now, what's your excuse? Why do you keep relapsing? Am I saying you're not welcome? Don't even go there. Of course not. I'm saying we need every hand that we can get in the trench helping us turn the tide. See, they explained to me when I got back to this fellowship in 1987 that it was not okay that I picked up a gazillion chips for 7 years, that it was time to get sober and stand for something. Let me tell you what they talked to me about real quick. Y'all know what commitment means? Here's a little cat named Goethe back centuries ago wrote this. It says, there's one elementary truth that the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. All sorts of things occur to help that would never have otherwise have occurred, and which no man could have ever dreamed would have come their way. Go with it? Let me paraphrase it for you. Gerda's a little long-winded. You commit, God kicks in. But you understand what commitment is? I was thinking, Myers and my little sister, we used to go to swimming lessons out in Odessa when we were West Texas little guys. And the swimming lessons were at 8 o'clock in the morning, you know. It's cold up there in West Texas. 8 o'clock in the morning, I don't care where you are. It's on the desert. It's cold. And we're sitting out there. I still had this vision of all three of us standing like this on the side of the pool, getting ready to do swimming lessons. Y'all with us? Up to our ankles in it. And then you jump back out again, and then you jump back in up to your knees, and you jump back out. I mean, this is painful. Everybody else is out swimming, right? We're trying to get our little minnow badge or whatever the hell it is, you know. I think I still have mine someplace. Very few thing I ever got. But, you know, we're out there like this. You get in there about to Mr. Winky, you know, and jump out and swear off, I'm never going to get in that water again, you know. And but little kids, you know. And finally, you know, the class is half over, and we finally jump in. And then, of course, 2 seconds later, the water feels great. They can't get us out of that pool. You with us? And that's exactly what I did for 7 years. I'd get in just so far until it starts to get uncomfortable, and then I'd jump back out. And that's a bunch of y'all are nodding your head because you've done it. Guys, you got to jump in. The only way through it is through it. If there was an easier, softer way, we'd tell you. If you could go around it, if you could avoid the steps, if you could avoid this God thing, we'd tell you. The only way to do it is to commit. That's what that man asked me to do. Chris, commit. Commit to coming to these meetings. Commit to getting involved. And guys, every time I turned around, they were asking me to do something I did not want to do. Be of service. Get on this committee. They had me hooked up with intergroups where I met Joanne the first time. They had me hooked up, 6 months sober. They wouldn't let me sit. They saved my life. I agree. In 1987, when Don was there and Carrie and Jan and a bunch of the other buckaroos, I hadn't finished working the steps. I was working on a 4-step when I drove home one night after a Friday night meeting. And Smith was there. We were laughing and tearing him up and just having a great time. This is 2 weeks after I tried to commit suicide. And I drove back up to North Texas, up there, my little apartment up there off corporate and 121, and pulled the tailgate down of that old beat-up pickup truck. I drove into this fellowship, and I remember pulling the tailgate down, and I'm looking around the 7-Eleven and stop and go, and all the places I used to buy booze, I can see from my parking lot. And that other stuff that we don't talk about in AA, the guy that sells it lives in my apartment complex. And it's Friday night, and I got a pocket full of money. I don't want it. Sat there on the back end of that truck in front of God and everybody and cried like a baby. Because the obsession to drink and had been lifted. And this wasn't because I had finished the steps. It was because I finally made an absolute commitment that nothing was going to drive me out of AA. Nothing. Nobody was going to ever get in my way of this fellowship again. No woman, no job, no responsibility was ever going to get in the way of my allegiance to a fellowship that was placed at my disposal 68 years ago. There's a lot of people made sacrifices so that Chris Schramer could live today. I mean, gee whiz, guys, we've got some responsibility here. You want a little temporary relief? Is that what you're looking for? My sponsor today, he beats it in my head on a regular basis. You looking for relief? Are you looking for release? How free do you want to be? Do you want to just be sober today, one day at a time? I get so sick of that crap, I can just puke. Listen, folks, this book doesn't talk about that. This book doesn't talk about that. This book doesn't say we stay sober one day at a time. This book says we live life one day at a time. I don't get up in the morning 16 years sober and decide I'm going to stay sober today. I choose to stay sober today. Absolute rubbish. Absolute rubbish. You know what I do? I get up in the morning and do exactly what I was instructed by good sponsors. I pray and I meditate in the morning. And I make some commitments to go to some meetings where I can help other people. You think I'm sitting in an AA meeting listening? Oh, good, what can I hear today that's going to change my life? Buddy, my life was changed 16 years ago. The obsession to drink was lifted from me. I am no more recovered today than I was 16 years ago. I'm a different person, but I recovered 16 years ago. When that obsession leaves you, you're done. Can you lose that? Absolutely. We watch it 1,000 times. Watch people get some sobriety and lose it. What happened? They made a conscious choice to walk away from this fellowship. And it happens the same for millions of us out there. That's a conscious choice. Ooh, I don't need those meetings anymore. I'm much too busy. Great. Mm-hmm. Good. You selfish, 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 selfish person. Arrogance of you. You see, the problem was nobody explained to me. Smith explained to me. Others in this room explained to me when I got to this fellowship. Chris, you've been a taker all your life. You're not coming into these meetings looking for something to get. You're coming into these meetings to give. When your attitude towards that shifts, I don't care if you've been sober 6 months or 6 years or 16 years or 60 years, for heaven's sakes. You've got one responsibility in the meeting, and that's to make sure that it stays on topic and that we're talking about God and the steps. Making sure that the newcomer is getting fed. When do you stop being a newcomer? We got people sitting in this room right now that are sober years and still never sponsored anybody. What, you think that's okay? It's not okay. When are you going to do your turn in the trench? When are you going to get the good stuff? See, because I got to tell you something, guys. For 16 years, I mean, I've been through some tough times in 16 years. I had a divorce in that thing, and I've got some health problems at one time. But, buddy, it's been a gravy train, buddy, with biscuit wheels for a long time. You know, it don't get much better than that. I got to tell you. Why is that? You think God just happens to pick me out and says, Chris, you're... No. No. Because I believe exactly what Cliff read is earlier. You follow the dictates of a higher power, and God's going to take you to a place that you've never been before. And God's going to continue to take you to new and wonderful places. Let me read something to you. Great something. Somebody sent it to me. Commitment. A guy named Ralph Marston wrote this. It's real short. Commitment means acting not just when it is convenient or comfortable, but whenever it's necessary. Commitment means setting priorities and following them without fail. Commitment is more than just words, much more than just saying you will. Commitment is doing whatever it takes to make it happen. Commitment is available to anyone who understands and appreciates its value enough to live with it each and every moment. Commitment requires no special skill, only sufficient desire, the faith and virtue of the endeavor. Commitment goes ahead and gets the job done, even though opinion and circumstances may fight vigorously against it. Commitment sees things through to completion. Commitment bears the pain of the moment without becoming dismayed. Commitment enjoys the pleasures of the journey without being sidetracked. Commitment can be summoned in an instant and can last for a lifetime. With true commitment, what you intend is surely what you will be. Can y'all get down with this thing of commitment? And I sit in our fellowships, in all of the fellowships, and I sit and I watch so many people. They say, I'm committed. I'm going to get well. And then they sit on their butt and let everybody else do the work. Well, but you see, guys, we're blessed because we do the work. We're trying to get... It's like me going to the gym. It's like me going to a gym and asking somebody else to lift the weights for me. You know, really. I mean, what is it? Hey, buddy, nah, that ain't going to cut it. Don't be picking up them little pussy weights. Get them big weights, you know, because I'm feeling a little flabby here, you know, and I need some big muscles. You ain't sweating near enough, you know. Just get on it. I'm sitting there reading the newspaper. Yeah, 10 more, buddy. And come, what is this? Ridiculous. And yet, when I don't get the big muscles, then I want to blame him. And that's exactly what we do around our fellowships. You're sitting in a meeting dying because you're not hearing the solution. Look at the schedule of the meeting you're going to. Oh, what is it? Oh, it's an open discussion meeting. Great. Wonderful. There's a place in the book. It always gets thrown in my face. There'll be somebody this afternoon. They'll come up this tonight. They'll come up here and say, but Chris, it says in the book that the old timers set aside a couple of nights a week for the newcomers to bring their problems. Great idea. No, I think that's cool. A couple of nights a week for newcomers to bring their problems. Great idea. We could call it a beginner's meeting. This is a great idea. I think we're on to something. You know, and then we could free up the other 1,500 open discussion meetings in the DFW area and turn them into literature-based meetings and have a bunch of people getting sober, kicking butt, and taking names. What a great idea that would be. I think it's a great idea, guys. We could put them on the schedule. P&M meetings. Open P&M meetings. It's pissers and moaners meetings for those of you that don't understand that. You guys think I'm real callous about this. Do you think for a second that I don't spend time during the week talking to people that I am in recovery with about my problems? When I was going through that divorce, don't you think there was dozens of you in this room that I talked to about that? You know, I just had a little more respect for you than to bring it into an AA meeting where you got a newcomer dying in there and wanting to take up the whole hour talking about my stupid divorce. I mean, it's the height of selfishness if you want to come in during the day and talk about some chicken shit problem of yours. We got a bunch of trained professionals out there called counselors and therapists that would love to spend some time with you. Come before the meeting. Let's visit. Come after the meeting. Come to my house. Let's go to Denny's. Said it from a million podiums. But geez, guys, in the hour that we had together, why don't you give it a rest? Why don't you open the book and read exactly what Cliff just read, that your life is fixing to change like you wouldn't believe. If you will stop focusing on that external crap and start focusing on the internal stuff, you're going to get well. Can y'all get down with that? Alcoholism is internal. Spiritual malady is internal. It has got nothing to do with your external stuff. Because I know too many people in this room right now that I know personally that are going through the ringer. But if you talk to them, I guarantee you they're happy, joyous, and free. And they always got time for the newcomer. And they're going to walk through this stuff with grace and dignity, and they're going to get to the other side, and everything's going to be cool. Is it scary? You better believe it. You better believe it. It's a leap of faith, folks. Reach out for the newcomer. Stop worrying about your stuff, and let God worry about your stuff. Because all you're doing is mucking up the water. Let me say one more quick thing. I'm going to let you guys run. Part of this thing about commitment is being there. And part of this thing is about, how can I put this? Allowing some people in your life that will hold you accountable. That's why I'm a firm believer in home group. That's why I'm a firm believer in a sponsor. With 16 years, why do I need a sponsor? I don't need a sponsor to help me through this work. I'm there. I need a sponsor to hold me accountable today. I need other men and women in this fellowship to hold me accountable. See, guys, what kills alcoholics and addicts is a thing called isolation. And you get in a place by yourself long enough, your little head's going to start telling you that you're not really one of us. And that you could probably, just like Cliff Bishop said, you probably could have a couple of beers and get away with it. You with us? I could probably go down there to the old dock and get some barbiturates, maybe a few little benzos to help me through the rough patches, and everything's going to be okay. And unless you've got somebody there holding you accountable, you're going to believe that crap. And you're going to do it, and you're going to be the newcomer sitting back in a meeting again, having lost your sobriety. All because nobody was there to hold you accountable. Newcomer needs to be held accountable. Old-timer needs to be held accountable. Guys, that's how you know you're doing the deal. When you finally get to a spot where you're willing to let somebody else in your life, you're there. Most of us in this room, though, we've had to fight this thing called ego, our little arrogance. Who in the hell do we think we are? You're not going to stay sober by yourself. I don't know what to tell you. 20 years around it, trying to get well. I've worked at this hospital for 10 years. I have watched literally thousands of alcoholics and addicts come through that hospital. And every single one of them that will open up and allow other people to become part of their life, they're kicking butt, taking names. And the minute you close everybody off and get back to your little secret life, you're dead. You're dead. You can sit there and blame the wife or blame the job or blame all this other, but that is not the case. We need to get connected with God, folks. And that path, although it's quite easy to find at times, it's difficult to stay on that path. Because it's easy after a few years of sobriety to think, I got that. I don't need to go back down and do this business. Patty was going to be here, my wife. Some of y'all have met her. A lot of y'all have met her. Some of you haven't, but she really wanted to come up here because she loves Primary Purpose Group. She thinks Cliff Bishop hung the moon, and none of us are going to tell her any different. So, you know, she wanted to come real bad, but she'd already made a commitment to do a women's conference down in the Hill Country. And, of course, she immediately started, well, heck with that conference. I'm going to go to Primary Purpose. I'm going to go up there to Dallas and see them. And then she, you with us? A couple of days into it, she says, I made this commitment to do this. I got to do this. That's what we're talking about. That's the fellowship in action. When you say you're going to do something, by God, do it. You say you're going to show up, take care of it. That's what my sponsor beat into my head. It's not okay to be late. It's not okay to say you're going to do something and not follow through. Let me bring you current. I got a great life today. I don't know how from that rundown little house over in Denton, Texas, drinking myself into oblivion every night, I got from there to here in a job where I make enough money to pay my bills in a room full of people that I can't tell you how close I am to some of you. I tell you, that hospital, one of the things that happened is that we have a tendency to, some of you just get under our skin, you know. Some of you we fall in love with, you know, because the heart speaking to heart, you know, the spirit speaking to the spirit. And we're watching you guys walk through this stuff and come out the other side with grace and dignity. 6 months you're out here sponsoring people and going to the Homeward Bound and going to the wind-up joints and carrying the message back. Buddy, that's what it's about. That's what it's about. We're no longer having to pull your dead weight. You're in the trench helping us pull the weight. We're so honored. And I bet you a dollar, I've said it in here before, Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob and all those coots that have gone before us, I bet you that every one of them right now are up there right now looking back down at this gathering with big shitty grins on their face. Because I got to tell you, there's some people that took what they said to heart. Remember this, folks. The steps don't get me sober. The steps get me connected to God, and God gets me sober. For every one of you that's standing in the trenches, I'm going to tell you something. Thank you for doing it. I got a little 16-year-old stepson. Y'all heard me talk about Rhino, you know. And I got to tell you, he drives him crazy when I talk about him on these tapes. So if y'all see him, tell him I didn't say anything about him. But, you know, he ain't got a drop of my blood in him. He's a stepson, but he is me. Every time I see this kid, I mean, he is me. And he's going to need this fellowship. And I hope and pray that there's a group like this, wherever he surfaces, whenever he decides that he wants to get this deal, I hope there's a bunch of you little knuckleheads out there ready to catch that kid. I want to thank Don for being in that room and staying in that room and not putting up with my bullshit. I want to thank my current sponsor, Mark, for doing the same thing, for holding my feet to the fire and holding me accountable, for loving me enough to tell me the truth. Bless every one of you. Thank you so much for letting me come up and visit.